Welcome to Continued Success, another warm winter Friday here on A Broken Planet, and we are going to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies in whatever capacity we can in what has amounted to a rather quiet offseason for your favorite franchise. My name is Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. Good afternoon, Liz.
Yo.
Welcome to another episode of Continued Success. Are we feeling good about how things shook out with the Hall of Fame?
Sure. Why not?
I mean, good?
Fine. I mean, Roland's in. He was really happy and touched to be in that video with him. Scott Roland, for those who may not know Scott Roland, there was a video posted online of him telling his aged parents, who are adorable, about, you know, him getting in. There was a lot of crying. It was very sweet. So, you know, I'm happy about that. Like, I'm happy for him personally, about the rest of the Hall of Fame. I have an opinion on what that means long term.
Good. We're going to share some opinions. I kind of stand by what I said before, that Scott Rowland doesn't even really seem like a Philly to me.
No.
So like that aspect of it, I'm just like, yeah, sure, whatever. He did say per MLB.com about the Phillies. I went through the minor league system with the Philadelphia Phillies and I learned how to play the game. My 6 years in Philadelphia, I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. It taught me how to play the game. It taught me who I was as a player. And that I believe. Like, I think he
too.
Did. Because he brought that up when he left, that he was like, I can't be someone I'm not. And I think he figured out, like, this is the kind of guy I am. This is the kind of player I am. And that shit just ain't working here in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Thankfully, now I've spent 6 years here, and now I can leave.
Right. And, you know, where Larry Boa and him, obviously, famously, didn't quite jive. But even Larry Boa tweeted out, you know, hey, congratulations, Scott. You know, blah, blah, blah. He's a great player. When he was announced that he was getting into the Hall of Fame. I mean, nobody cares about this stuff anymore. We're talking about a soap opera from a decade ago.
Two decades, I mean. As far as, like, Bo and Roland, they're all adults. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you going to do? Hold on to this for the rest of your lives? Like, no. Like, he probably realized I was kind of a dick. And Boa probably ended up realizing, yeah, I was not great either. And, you know, they figured it out. They moved on. It's nice.
Yeah.
There's no grudges being held, and that the Phillies organization is celebrating him. I know that there are loudmouth fans on the internet and probably in real life who don't like it, but fuck them. It doesn't matter. He's in the Hall of Fame, and the Phillies are welcoming it. So cram it, all of you.
You can get your asshole feathered, folks.
Yes.
If you think
I had forgotten about that. God,
that's
how could
right.
I have?
It's called a callback. Yeah. I've seen that too. I feel like it's. Actually, I feel like there was a much more thunderous anti-Scott Rowland response from Phillies fans than I expected. And I know that sounds like obtuse, but I don't know. For this one specifically, he's Scott Rowland and Phillies. It's like synonymous with disappointment and frustration, but not like, I don't know. J.D. Drew is like anger. It's like funny anger. He's like kind of a mascot for a generation of Phillies fans. Who watched the team not get the guys they wanted for years and years and years. And Roland is kind of like a branch of that tree, but I don't know, man. I just don't have it. I don't have that. And like I said, I was a little surprised that people still hung on to their anger like that. What's funny to me is that, like, the algorithm or whatever dictates that sites mention every player who used to play for their team that is on the Hall of Fame ballot, as though that's always automatically going to be interesting to their fans. Like, Roland is a notable Philly. I believe his Baseball Reference he's in his Phillies gear. Obviously he won Rookie of the Year. He was rookie of the year in Philadelphia. He was considered like, oh, this is the future. This is the future of the Phillies. This is going to be a guy that's going to be here. He's our stud. He's our star. Yeah, he was rookie of the year in 97. He won multiple gold gloves here. He was a main part of who the Phillies were planning to be, and it just didn't work out that way. So, like, that's, yeah, okay. I'm not saying, because I don't really consider him, quote-unquote, a Philly, that, like, I'm erasing that part of his history. It's there. It's significant. And if people are like, I'm excited that a Phillies player is going into the Hall of Fame, even though obviously he's not going to wear a Phillies hat when he goes into the Hall of Fame, that's great. You should do that. But what I'm talking about is, I don't think any Phillies fans care or want Billy Wagner in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, God, no.
And I'm laughing because he is also on the ballot, but, like, the headline on Phillies.com was, like, Roland elected in sixth year. Wagner, Rollins, Abreu, climb. As though Wagner fucking belongs.
Why is Wagner on there?
Next to, like, guys like Jimmy Rollins, beloved icon who has the most hits in franchise history, and Bobby Abreu, another guy who people ragged on at the time, but I think I'm correct in saying they have certainly come back around on, you know, and have become more aware of his contributions and how significant they were at the time as well. But Wagner has no Phillies fan wants Billy Wagner in the fucking Hall of Fame. Billy Wagner couldn't even get into the fucking relief room in Hatboro, PA. He's fucking banned. He's
one of
five guys banned from the powder room in Hatboro, Pennsylvania, where relievers, specifically Phillies relievers, are honored. And he's one of five guys who can't even get into that fucking shrine. So he can't get into the fucking Hall of Fame. Oh, bummer. Me, a Phillies fan, is really bummed because this guy who used to have a Phillies cap on didn't get into the fucking Hall of Fame. Eh, go fuck yourself. What did Pat call him? A rat? Fucking rat.
Yes. A rat. Very good.
Yeah. So, yeah, in general, Hall of Fame results this year, pretty good. Pretty fine. Yeah, we've certainly had worse years. And that Roland was the only one is, honestly, I think some people were surprised. I think a lot of people were expecting no one to get in. As Sarah Langs tweeted, Scott Roland's 10.2% in his first year on the ballot is the lowest in a player's debut year on the ballot who eventually got in on the writer's ballot since voting returned to being annual in 1968. And, you know, there was obviously some, now, you know, I don't have to say that I typically stay out of the Hall of Fame discourse, but I've also learned that this time of year, A, there's typically not a whole lot else to talk about, and B, this is a baseball podcast about professional baseball. So this is kind of what's going on. I'm prepared to talk about it. I guess what I'm saying is the response to that was like, you saw some people saying anybody who only gets 10.2% at one point should never be in the Hall of Fame. Stark was like, what the hell are you talking about? Getting into the Hall of Fame is supposed to be hard. That's the whole point. And that he had to like, that he had the largest climb in history, I do think says more about voting and perspective on like the people who are voting and what their perspective is. Because as someone pointed out, it's not like Roland's numbers have changed from his first year to now. Like the same data still exists, except now, you know, there was a very small amount of people who thought he deserved to be in. And now the amount of people you need to think you are, should be in to get in, thinks that he should be in. And he is. So what changed? Is this, what does this mean? Voting process? I mean, first of all, the voting process is broken and stupid, but what does this say about the voting process?
It says that, well, first of all, it says that they've cleared a backlog of candidates. A bunch of dudes came off the ballot last year. And since they're limited at 10 for some stupid reason, you know, that does limit the number of guys you can vote for. So some dudes didn't have room for Scott Rowland in their 10 guys, you know? So, I mean, that's all it really says, that they cleared a backlog. And looking at all of the remaining guys on there, that has, I think, more of an impact than people think. Like, because when you're looking at Scott Rowland and Barry Bonds, that's a big difference. And you're not voting for Barry Bonds, whoever this moron is. You know, you're not voting for Barry Bonds because he took steroids. So, you know, you look at Rowland, like, how can I vote for Roland if I'm not voting for Bonds? He's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Stupid old man, addled brain. You know, I think looking at the guys who are on the ballot with him at that moment does have an impact.
Yeah, I think that it has to have an impact. And like sometimes voters are thinking like, well, this guy's only got so many years left and I only have one more pick, so I got to get this guy instead of this guy, even though I think they're both eligible, and I'll come back and I'll vote for this guy next year. Like, it's not crazy. Like, that's how the system works. So that's how you got to vote. But of course, in that scenario, the voter has like common sense. But also, I kind of, thinking about it this year, I don't think that they're like, people will look at a ballot, and obviously most ballots get the kind of response of like, this is inexcusable. This is the worst ballot I've ever seen. How could you vote for this guy and not this guy? And that just makes it seem like there's this objective system that is used to determine who is a Hall of Famer and who is not. And I think we know by now that it's not. Like, guys, writers who cover a certain player are just more likely to vote for that player, even if, like, if he's a fringe candidate or a completely undeserving candidate. It's just like voting for MVPs. Like, that one Texas Rangers writer was like, I voted for Michael Young because I like him. And he's like the only one who voted for Michael Young. And someone was like, but that contradicts this thing. And he said, like, a quote that kind of, I don't like this writer, but he said this quote that kind of, like, changed my life. And then he was like, life is full of contradictions. And I was like, yeah, that's, yeah.
The like whole process is subjective, and the players aren't even allowed to have a say. This is the only reason this has meaning is because we give it meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if, you know, if someone would manage to, like, opened an alternate baseball Hall of Fame and it became cooler and, you know, awesomer, that would become the baseball Hall of Fame that mattered.
And if they admitted things like, well, life is full of contradictions, I'm picking the players I want to see in the Hall of Fame. And I guess to a greater extent, if you could expound on that and say, because I am a writer who has been writing about baseball as my full-time job for all this time, I have a level of expertise, blah, blah, blah. But, like, for the most part, just lean in. I think everyone just needs to accept that the voters pick who they want. I don't think they're not following any kind of system. They're not rebelling against any kind of system. It's just, I want to do this, and so I did this. And I don't think that makes some of their voting not stupid. But it does, I think it just, it makes it easier to accept when you realize that, like, they're not following your system. They have a bunch of beliefs that probably contradict each other. They think this guy who, like, you know, attacked his wife should be in the Hall of Fame, but this guy who did steroids shouldn't be because of that reason. And it's just like, well, that math doesn't fucking math, but okay. And when, like, you know, they start being the ethics police, it gets really tiresome and really, really stupid. And I think when I talk about the process sucking, what I'm largely thinking about is instances like Curt Schilling should be in the Hall of Fame. Oh, wait, Curt Schilling's targeting me now? Now he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Like, that kind of shit is like, yeah, you're impossible to take seriously at this point because you're being exactly who, you know, we've suspected you are. Just like an asshole who's willing to ignore players' bullshit until the second it's something that you feel is pointed at you. Now, I'm not trying to get into the Schilling thing, and thank God we don't have to anymore. Because Curt Schilling doesn't want to be in the Hall of Fame.
And he's not, and he's off the ballot.
Bye. So, but this year we did get that one guy who voted only for Gary Sheffield.
Jesus.
And he
what
said
are we
that
doing?
Like, he said 500 home runs was a magical number for me, and like that's what makes me think Gary Sheffield should be in the Hall of Fame. And then he said he didn't vote for anybody else because everybody else on the ballot had some kind of debate around them. And if your candidacy for the Hall of Fame can be debated, then you shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. It should just be a surefire thing, which, again, plays into the idea that there's some kind
Jack
of equation.
Morris? What are we doing?
Isn't that fucking
what
crazy?
The fuck? What
I
the
mean,
actual fuck?
I would rather. I don't know why everyone's always like, oh, this coward didn't say which ballot was his and he didn't explain his reasons. All you're going to do is get upset about the reasons. You don't want to hear the fucking reasons.
And you know why. That's the thing. You know why. It's the same debate that's been raging over the last few days about, you know, the past few weeks, I guess, about Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes versus Burrow. Who's the best there? Mahomes versus Brady. Mahomes versus, you know, Purdy. Like, who... If it's always Mahomes versus, it's him. And you know why? No one wants to say it is because he's black. So let's...
I was going
to
say, yeah.
That's why. Because, like, oh, you know, him and Burrow. I'm just like, can we not do this?
They're casting the next Tom Brady, Liz.
They're casting the next Tom Brady. And unfortunately, they were not calling for Patrick Mahomes.
Can you believe it? They got to cast a new Brady. They got to cast a new Rodgers. And they look around the league and they see these young black quarterbacks excelling. And they're just like, well, Joe Burrow's pretty good. So
actually, I got to tell you, that's perfect. Rodgers and Burrow, my colleague Jay Busby on Yahoo Sports recently wrote something about the Bengals leaning into their role as the villain of the NFL. Kind of the heels, like, and... You know, you could kind of see it. Joe Burrow is snarky. He doesn't take any shit. Like, it's perfect. Because that's kind of, he's like the photo negative of Aaron Rodgers. It's the photo negative of Aaron Rodgers. And then you've got like Mahomes, who I find, you know, very good, but, you know, uninteresting as a human. And I think that's perfect for the Brady role. Uninteresting as a human, very good at football.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, they're, yeah.
I know this is not a football podcast, but I've just been reading a lot about football today.
It's the off season. It's okay if we talk about football for 2 minutes. We let off the last podcast talking about the Flyers and then the Eagles, probably for like 10 minutes. So.
Oh, I do want to urge everybody, I'm sure everyone listening here hates the Patriots as much as I do. On the Boston Herald yesterday, there was an article published about how horribly Bill Belichick fucked up the Patriots by hiring Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. His fail sons, who he now doesn't even have the decency to fire yet. They're just in limbo. I think I closed the article, so now I don't remember who wrote it. But go to Boston Herald sports section online. It is really good. Read it. You will definitely enjoy it.
Well, the other guy I wanted to talk about real quick, I found Ron Cook. I don't know what outlet he writes for. Apparently, he voted only for Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter for 2 years. And then after that was over, this year submitted his third straight blank ballot. I think if you want to submit a blank ballot, you can do that. But I think if you do it, they take away your vote. I think that should be the deal. It's like, if you're going to do it, that's fine. You can make your little statement, but we're going to give your vote to somebody who's going to partake.
Yeah. Like if you don't want to vote, then don't vote. Like, you could just not send in your ballot.
Why are you a part of this if you don't want to be a part of this?
That's the thing. Basically. Like, he's doing it to make a statement, and that's what shouldn't be allowed. Because they took Dan Le Batard's vote away. They took him away. Like, ages ago for doing whatever. Like, if you're going to submit a blank ballot and then own it, that should be it.
He gave his vote to Deadspin, who then, I believe, had readers vote on who they wanted to vote into the Hall of Fame.
Which is honestly almost... that's as close as you could possibly get to letting an actual player have a say in the whole role.
It's honestly like beyond the veterans committee. It's one of the coolest. It's the coolest thing that's ever happened involving the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
to me.
Hugely, 100% the coolest thing.
And no one knew whose vote it was, and he just said it on his own show that he like mentioned it offhandedly when they were wrapping up, and like he looks out, and his producers were all like, "What the fuck?
Whoa, no!" Take it back.
Yeah, that shit was hilarious. Oh my God.
That was great. It's important for us to remember the history.
Also,
remember the history.
I want to mention that apparently, according to Ryan Thibodeau, the guy who collects and discusses and breaks down all the individual baseball Hall of Fame ballots, he said, "I'm informed by my crew, who are still working diligently while I am absolutely not, that for the first time in a few years, we seem to have a ballot lost in the mail." Scott Osler from the San Francisco Chronicle isn't on the list of voters, and his ballot wasn't tallied. As far as this was tweeted at 8:17 p.m. on January 24th. So I thought that was interesting and kind of funny.
Yeah.
He voted for Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Francisco Rodriguez, Scott Rowland, Gary Sheffield, and Billy Wagner.
At least he picked 10, right?
He picked a lot of guys, which, you know.
I don't agree with most of them, but then again, how else do you get to 10 without lowering your standards a little bit and being like, the Hall of Fame should be a big tent? Which is why I think Scott Rowland's election is good, I think, because he's, you know, he's a great player. He's a Hall of Fame caliber player, but he wasn't the most exciting or flashiest all the time. It kind of proves that in this modern age, there is a path for guys like Rowland, which gives me some faith for Utley next year, for Chase Utley, who will be on the ballot next year for the first time. And I don't think he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm sure he'll get more than enough support to stay on. But I think if we're about to enter kind of a period where there's going to be some real bad ballots, there's going to be some in the next decade, I think there'll be more than enough opportunity for Utley to get in. And I think you can look to Rowland as a reason why.
Yeah, less slam dunks, fewer slam dunks in the years ahead, which will lead to all kinds of debate, which Hall of Fame debate is, gosh, it's just so productive and fun.
Among the handful of writers I like who write about it and the people, you know, who I respect who comment on it, I try not to listen to that. But those people, I could find it enjoyable if you're debating, you know, the merits of a guy who's really borderline. Like, what does make a Hall of Famer? You know, is there even an objective way we can talk about it? Because so much of election is personal biases, whether or not they're recognized, you know, mm-hmm. regardless of whether they're recognized.
Oh, absolutely. How bad would a Hall of Fame ballot have to be for the Writers Association to take action against it?
I don't think there's any. I mean,
right? Like, if you can turn in a blank ballot and not have anything happen to you, then what's really worse than that? Would it be worse to, like, if you had looked at this year's ballot and checked off, like, Mark Burley and no one else? Or, like, Mark Burley, J.J. Hardy, Johnny Peralta, and Mike Napoli, and then sent it in? Like, would they have just been like, you're not taking this seriously? And my response would be, nobody fucking takes this seriously. Well, look around you, man.
There is no ballot that could, as long as you follow the rules, there is no ballot that will get you expelled. You could vote for anyone. You could have voted for Cliff Lee last year. You could have been the only person to, you could have been the second person to vote for Michael Young. Wouldn't matter. You could submit any type of ballot you want, including a blank one, which is insulting to everyone. Whoever does that, you whiny children. You know, there's no ballot that'll be bad enough for them to do it. The right to vote, the only thing you need is the right to vote there.
Yeah, and when I say no one takes this seriously, I do want to add that the players and the people and the candidates take it very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And they should, and that's great. I don't think that writers take it seriously, and even the ones who are like, I take this very seriously, look, I made a little video about it and it's on Fox Sports now, like, that's over serious to me, is not taking it seriously. You know what I mean? Like, there's how players take it, and that's very seriously. There's either people who are like, whatever, and they don't take it seriously, and then there's people who are taking it way too seriously, which to me is another form of not taking it seriously. So I think that there's plenty of that going around. All right, last thing I want to do for Hall of Fame talk, Liz, is I think we should fill out a Hall of Fame ballot. I think we should look at this ballot and fill it out. And maybe we'll wind up doing two different ones. Maybe we just have two differing opinions. I, again, am someone who I don't really care what other, if I were voting, I really wouldn't care what other people thought. I would fill out my ballot and be like, these are the players that I like and I think should be honored in this fashion. And so these are mine. And it's heavily biased. It doesn't follow any objective logic, but I think we should go through name by name. I will read the name and you can tell me if you think yes or no. Would you like to do that?
Yes. What would you do if I said no?
I would say exactly what I thought you were going to say no, so I've said exactly what I would have said if you were going to say no.
I said, why not? Because we're here and you just spent all that time talking about it.
I would like to not do that. Fair enough. We'll be back after the break. All right. Let's start with A, number one, Bobby Abreu. In or out?
In.
I say in, so that's one. Next up, Bronson Arroyo.
No.
No, but yes to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, you know what? He's got enough money to live, and he's following his own literal drummer. So good for him.
Why not? So yeah, pass on that one, Bronson. But best of luck. Next up, Carlos Beltran.
No, because I hate him.
Is there a Hall of Fame for bashing your face into a wall as the ball sails over it into a home run?
God, I wish.
If there is, first ballot for Carlos Beltran. But yeah, hard pass, mostly because he was on the Mets. Next
and
up.
A cheater. Let's just not forget. He's the one that he said, let's do this cheating scandal, guys.
That's right. I forgot. I totally forgot all about that. Mark Burley.
I'm going to say no to that one, I think.
Fair enough. My argument for Burley would be do you remember that fucking play from opening day?
Oh, like, God, you're right.
10 years ago? I think that play alone should get him into the Hall of Fame.
You know what? This is our Hall of Fame ballot. Let's do it. I'd like to do that. Yes.
I would say yes to Burley for that play, but if we run out of candidates when we hit 10, I would say he'd be the one we cut.
But we can get him off there if we need to.
Right now, we're honoring him because that's one of the best baseball plays I've ever seen.
Yes.
It was like a behind the back kind of throw to. It was fucking crazy.
Incredible.
Everybody, look up the Mark Burley play if you haven't. It's just incredible.
Yes.
Next up, Matt Cain. Go fuck yourself.
Nope,
no. R.A. Dickey.
Nope. See ya.
I would say hard pass.
Yeah, that's a no.
You got a good energy about you, but that Mets uniform is really, really hurting your chances.
And
it's your own fault.
And also, he was not very good.
Well,
he had maybe 2 great seasons.
Is that really how we're measuring these guys?
I guess true, but like if I wasn't, either way, he's not coming close to the Hall of Fame. I just wanted to be like, it's not just because he sucks, it's because he sucks and he's bad.
No, I think he's not getting to the Hall of Fame because of what we're saying on this podcast.
I think so. I like that.
I'm going to say these next three, I'm going to say these are probably all no's. Jacoby Ellsbury, Andre Ethier, and J.J. Hardy.
Lol, no. Bye.
I got a soft spot for J.J. Hardy. I loved the era he was with the Orioles was some of the most fun I've had watching baseball with my dad, who is an Orioles fan. So I got a soft spot for him, but not soft enough to get him into the Hall of Fame.
I have a soft spot for Ethier because I thought he was very cute when I was younger. So that's
He looked like, you're not wrong. He looked like a guy who was designed to be attractive.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah. In a lab.
Yeah, in a lab. Todd Helton, yes.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. I loved watching Todd Helton. I remember they were like, oh, Derek Jeter, you know, when he goes, it's like the end of a generation of players, blah, blah, blah.
Is
and
it?
Then, like, that's that same year, Todd Helton, who, like, I don't know, he was in the same class, generation of guys, did that. He was like, you know. And near the end of his career was right around the corner. He was playing first base, and he did the hidden ball trick on a guy at first base. And it was just this perfect little squirrely veteran move that was like, yeah, nice, dude. That's awesome. So Todd Helton's in.
Yeah.
Next up, Torrey Hunter. I haven't seen anyone talk about Torrey Hunter in regards to the Hall of Fame.
No, if Jay Jaffe over at Fangraphs definitely did. That's true.
Oh, I'm
because
sure he did,
goes through every single Hall of Fame candidate. But
right.
I feel bad for Twins fans. He was on the Twins, right?
Yeah. He was on the Twins. He was on the Angels. Yeah, he's almost like a guy who played on only like a guy who had a hell of a career, got MVP votes, the highest he ever finished was 6th. He won a ton of gold gloves. He won 9 gold gloves.
That's his defense that might be really why he's
But there. He also had silver sluggers. He won 2 silver sluggers closer to the end of his effective years. He was an all-star at least 3-4 times. And all those years were like with the Twins and then the Angels. Then he was with the Tigers for a little bit. And then when he was 39, he went back to the Twins for his last season. So he's like my point was he only really played for like smaller teams. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a guy who really was one of the stars of the game, but never went to New York, never went to Boston. So like, you know, that's cool. I'm not going to vote for him, but that's cool.
I mean, his defense, that's the one thing I thought. I'm just like, God, Torrey Hunter was so great in the field. He was so
It's
great.
True.
And I feel like defense first guys aren't given their due because people always look at the home runs and blah, blah, blah. Like,
that's a good point.
There isn't a place for those guys anymore. Like, that's the thing. The Hall of Fame has made it so those dudes don't get any recognition anymore.
Right.
So, I think I'll say a provisional yes. I'll give it a if there's enough room on the ballot, I'd like to keep
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. Andrew Jones. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew Jones was him and Brian Jordan were like a couple of Braves who were just monsters, and I think their true contributions I think were limited for various reasons at the end of the day, but And I think Jones particularly is criticized for his steep drop off. But when they were in it, man, holy shit, dude, yeah. they were so fucking good. Oh my god. Jeff Kent, I think he gets overshadowed by Bonds.
Me too. A lot.
And I know he's better than in my head that he is.
But I still don't really want to vote for him.
I don't want to vote for him. I'd have no attachment and very little awareness.
I just don't care. Like, yeah. I care more about Tory Hunter than I do about Jeff Kent. I apologize to people who care about Jeff Kent, but I don't.
We don't have to apologize. Don't apologize. Is this our vote? This is our ballot. It can be literally anything we want. We could just draw a penis on it and send it back to the fucking museum. And they would be like, wow, what a statement.
In like 6 years, my coworker, Chris Swick, is going to have his Hall of Fame ballot because he's actually a member of the BBWAA. And so I think if we try hard enough, we could convince him to do that.
Okay. Get me in touch with him. I'll start that campaign now.
Do it. That might get him kicked out. That actually might be the ballot that does it.
There we go. See, we answered that question.
Penis ballot.
Okay, guys, who sent in the dick ballot? Come on. Come on. Wait, let's see. It's one of you internet boys, isn't it?
One of you internet boys. Like they're over at like the lunch table in the back.
Like anyone doesn't write on the internet anymore. Yep. All right, we got another stretch of guys I think we can pretty easily put aside. John Lackey, Mike Napoli, Johnny Peralta.
Bye. No, thank you.
Yeah. If I have a vote left, I don't think I will. But if I have a vote left, Mike Napoli's getting it because I love those kinds of players.
Yeah, I know you do.
All right, now we're running through fire here. And this is where the debates come in, I think. Because if you vote for one of these guys, the question is always, why not the other guys? Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez.
I want to be a better person, but I don't like any of them, really. So, no.
Really? None of them?
I mean, I don't like Manny Ramirez at all. He was a great player, and he was good for so long. But I wish this is my ballot. I don't have to be objective. He's a douchebag, so...
That's a really good point.
I don't like Andy Pettit ever. Never have. He was on that 2009 team. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, I don't like Andy Pettit. And A-Rod's a fucking dork.
Yep. I don't care. I mean, that's the thing. A-Rod is one of the greatest players of all time. And yet, I would sooner put... Not Barry Bonds. I would sooner put, like, Roger Clemens in the Hall.
Mike Napoli, yeah, in the Hall than A-Rod. I
agree. just because A-Rod's a dick, he's such a douchebag, I can't stand him, he's so smarmy, and I don't believe he's a real person.
That's the thing, right?
He's I from Westworld.
He might just be an AI that no one has ever actually seen in person. He was only ever on our screens.
God, that makes so much sense, because hearing him speak is like that, what is it, that chat...
Yeah.
TPG thing or whatever it is. Like him talking, it's like his interests are business, organizing my businesses, looking for new business opportunities, counting my money. Like those are his interests. He has no interests.
And he's saying it to, a person who's off camera and actually there is no person there. Like that's what they decide to shoot him as, where he's sitting at a desk talking to no one. Why are you so fucking weird, man? Why did you learn all your business tactics from like a weekend seminar at in a hotel conference room? You are like so rich. What is happening?
I know.
So here's the thing. I'm going to vote for Manny because of all the people on this ballot, of all the players I've watched since I was like a kid, Manny Ramirez is like the most unstoppable hitter I've ever seen in my life. And when I say unstoppable, I just mean... I mean, yeah, first of all, huge douchebag. You kidding me?
Giant fucking douchebag. And that's the thing. This is against my thing because he's such a good hitter.
Ugh. He is. And he was a student of Charlie Manuel's. And he, that's not like why I'm not like, oh, Charlie Manuel. I mean, for real, this is kind of like almost a real Hall of Fame vote. He is one of the most, incredible, unstoppable hitters I've ever seen in my life. Nothing seemed like it could stop him. It's, by the way, low-key, very satisfying subplot that the Phillies beat Manny Ramirez and the Dodgers in the NLCS that one year, when the whole narrative, which everyone forgets, was that Manny was going to take the Dodgers, and it was Manny being Manny, and he was going to beat the Phillies, and they were going to go, and they put that, they were real quick with that game story before J-Roll walked it off. And they put up ESPN put up a gamer saying that like the Dodgers had won already, and that they credited Manny for making the shoestring catch earlier in the game as like for being the star of the game, and they had to take it down and do the story over, and it was very satisfying. But again, because beating Manny was so hard, and when I say he was unstoppable, I mean not just if you're the opposing pitcher, if you're the opposing defense, if you're just the opposition in general. I mean, because Manny was such a fucking douchebag, he went to work every day at war with his own douchebagness.
Yes.
And he still beat his own douchebagness to be one of the best and most pure hitters of all fucking time. And he's what, still playing in like New Zealand or something?
No, you cannot stop. That's you're right. You cannot stop that man from playing baseball. He'll do it till he's dead. He wants to do it forever. You know,
so
and
I
like that. That about him, I do.
I think he's got a little hamster and a wheel for a brain, but it hasn't stopped running yet, and it's just going to make him play baseball forever. So, I'm voting for Manny.
All right. I understand that. If I did my ballot again, maybe I would do it differently, but this is all for fake and play, so I decided this is the
formal
way it goes.
Very formal and real, yeah. Okay, moving along. Next up, Francisco Rodriguez. No! Seems like a shitty, shitty person. Yeah.
See ya.
Plus, was, you know, Mets uniform. So Scott Rolen, yeah, I would have voted
completely
for Scott. Jimmy, yeah, come on,
of course.
Of obviously
100%.
Voting for Jimmy Rollins, you fucking dumb not to. Gary Sheffield, yes,
yeah,
yes. My instinct is yes.
Yeah.
I'm going like instinct is yes. And then the rest of these guys, the rest of these guys, except for one, I'm going to say easy nose, Houston Street, Omar Vizquel, nope. Billy Wagner, Jared Weaver, Jason Wirth. How many votes we got left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got space for Wirth. I'm fucking voting for Jason Wirth.
You're not going to put Mike Napoli on there?
I got another one for Napoli.
Oh, you already have a space for Napoli.
I counted 8 votes there. So my ballot would be Abreu, Burley. This would piss everybody.
No, it would.
Bobby Abreu, Mark Burley, Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, Manny Ramirez, Scott Rolen, Jimmy Rollins, Gary Sheffield, Jason Wirth, and Mike Napoli. And yours is the same, except you might vote for Torii Hunter.
No, I will if I have room.
Okay, so you're saying no to those last 5 guys.
Yeah. How much space do I have left?
Then I think you have 8, same as me. So you can do anything you want with those last 2 votes. And if you want to vote for Torii Hunter, then
yes, one can go to Torii Hunter, and you know, and I'll give one to Manny Ramirez too.
There you go. So we basically have the same ballot, except you voted for Torii Hunter, and I voted for Jason Wirth. And Mike Napoli.
For me, it's just that I have a weakness for amazing defense. And Torii Hunter was a great defensive outfielder.
Remember
so good.
in the playoffs when he went over the wall and didn't make that catch on the home run in Fenway, and the cop just raised his hands in the air, and everyone and he was like, "I fucking hurt myself," and this cop's just like, "Yeah, go Red Sox." That's a great baseball moment.
Yeah, really, I love it. He's willing to give it all, but that's the nature of fandom, baby.
Hell yeah.
If you had made the catch and gone over, the cop probably would have beaten him to death.
Oh, God. Well, it just kicks his gloves so the ball trickles out. Oh, no! I could see that happen. In Boston? Absolutely.
Oh, completely.
All right, well, that's the unequivocally good... an unquestionably good Hall of Fame ballot, in case you were wondering. And now we can stop talking about that for the next calendar year, and all of our lives are better for it.
Yep.
So, next topic, Liz, all the top prospects lists are debuting right now. All the major outlets are putting out their top prospect lists. And you and I, being very clued in on prospects, I feel like this is a topic we should discuss, largely because, and someone pointed this out the other day, that, you know, what was it, like 5 years ago, the Phillies were one of the worst teams in baseball. And, well, I guess 5 years ago was 2018. So maybe more than five, like 7 years ago, Phillies were one of the worst teams in baseball, and their top pitching prospect was like Jake Thompson. And now they're the defending World Series champions, and their top pitching prospect is considered to be the best pitching prospect in all of baseball by some outlets. So things have really changed, and Andrew Painter is on a lot of these lists. And you had I believe, monitored some of these lists that had debuted and have some information for us regarding the Phillies and their prospects of the future.
Yes. So this, I'm sure The Athletic probably has a top prospects list. I just never think of them as... I just never think of them. sorry, I don't necessarily mean that entirely, but I don't mean that entirely. But.
What I don't think of would stagger our audience.
Yes.
The things I don't think about, oh, baby.
Yeah. That's the truth. Are we talking about? Oh, yeah. so I took a look. The Major League Baseball, I think today or yesterday, just released their top 100 prospects. Baseball Prospectus released their top 101, and Baseball America released their top prospects earlier, I think last week. So those are pretty much the major players. I will look up Athletic.
And this is after Andrew Painter was named, I believe, the inaugural Baseball America Minor League Pitcher of the Year. This was like a while ago, but that honor is already a feather in his cap. And he was a unanimous choice for the 2021 preseason high school All-America team, and has really been a top prospect for like the entirety of his minor league career. I mean, there's a reason the Phillies have made some trades since Dombrowski took over with very little top prospects to mine from. And they have still managed to hang on to Andrew Painter because he is a guy. And if you want to hear more about him, I would say listen to the last episode of Hittin' Season, in which John Stolness interviewed Phillies farm director Preston Mattingly. And the topic of Andrew Painter, if you would believe it, came up. So you got to hear someone from the Phillies specifically, you know, directly talking about this top prospect. It was a really interesting conversation and worth a listen.
Yes, for sure. Please listen to that. So, yeah, Andrew Painter continues to climb up the rankings. Baseball America has him at number five, the top pitching prospect in baseball. They have him, I believe, highest of anyone. The Baseball Prospectus, I think, has him at, oh, where did it go? I have so many windows open, guys. I'm very serious about this. Baseball Prospectus has him at number 12. He is their top pitching prospect. There's no other pitching prospects higher than him. They have him lowest. And MLB has him at number 6. But MLB also does not have Mick Abel on this list. Or what is it? The third guy that we all talk about.
Griff McGarry.
They do not have Griff McGarry on here, but
yeah, I saw that. Yeah, McGarry is one that I'm less familiar than the other guy. I think this was his like big. This was basically his coming out party in 2022. He started being listed alongside Painter and Abel, and you know he definitely deserves it. But I feel like on the national level, what you typically get is like a much wider and more skewed perspective. And I'm not saying it's correct. I'm just saying it's understandable that he hasn't quite made it onto all of these top 100 lists, even though he deserves to be on them. But you just don't get as narrow or as focused a view, I guess, from the national writers and from the national outlets, especially like MLB.com, whose rankings, honestly, Baseball America, I think, and Baseball Prospectus are like the tops of this. I know for a fact.
I just included that for funsies, but they
I'm just saying this is why they may not be on there. Baseball Prospectus has some of the best prospect minds out there, and so obviously does Baseball America. That's what they do. Yep. MLB is just like, well, we should participate in this because it is our sport.
Yeah, I mean, his placement, like he's 12 on Baseball Prospectus's list, and that seems low compared to the 5 that they have him at on Baseball America. But
you're talking about Painter?
Yeah, Andrew Painter.
Okay, I was like, wait, McGarry's number 12 on somebody's list?
And then
he's just not even on one of the other ones? Holy shit.
No, I skipped topics. I was thinking about something in my mind, and as I do when I talk to my husband some of the time, I just start talking about whatever was in my brain, assuming that you could just hear it, and we were on the same page. I'll just start talking about something about, you know, maybe 30 seconds after we've, you know, stopped talking about one other topic, and I start talking about, like, you know, we definitely need to replace that thing in the refrigerator. And my husband's like, what? We were talking about going to see your parents last week, and what made you think of that?
Oh my god, when did you get home?
You couldn't hear me? You couldn't hear me being annoyed about the little red light that comes on every time? Talking about that in my head just now? Yeah, sorry about that.
Step out from behind a potted plant. We should fix that thing in the fridge. What the hell? Yes. God damn it.
Yes. Sorry. So Andrew Painter, I'm talking about Andrew Painter.
Yes.
Sorry about that. You were talking about Griff McGarry. I'm not talking about Andrew Painter, who's number 5 on Baseball America's list, number 6 on MLB.com's list, which we don't necessarily care about, and number 12 on Baseball Prospectus, which feels low. I think they just like position players more than Baseball America does. That's really it, because it's not like he's lower than any other pitching prospects. Like, where he is on those lists is almost incidental, because he's the best pitching prospect in baseball in either way.
Yeah, and I think you're gonna start see, I think for the past couple years there people have been, like, national prospect evaluators have been really down on the Phillies farm system. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. They you know, it's widely known how thin things were getting down there. I do think you're starting to see the tide turn a little bit, because there was like a year or two where guys who maybe deserved to be higher and deserved to have some more recognition were getting a little more ignored because of the reputation of the Phillies farm system as a whole. But I think you're starting to see that kind of turn now, especially with the kind of exposure Painter's getting.
Yeah. Like, he was rated the best pitching prospect in baseball in an MLB pipeline executive poll. So, like, the executives, the player development guys, all those guys around baseball voted him overall as the number one pitching prospect in baseball. 34% of the vote.
And you said he was lower on Baseball Prospectus's list than Baseball America's?
Yes.
Is that correct?
But there were no pitchers in front of him on either list, so.
Right. I do have a note here that previous prospect rankings, Baseball Prospectus was quick to note that Painter's command wasn't great. So they might just be like, I think they are, that is the place they're coming from when they're ranking him. That might affect his placement on their list. But yeah, in general, we're talking about a guy who's 6'7". I forget all the time.
Oh my God.
What a absolute fucking unit Andrew Painter
is.
He's huge. He's got a crazy arsenal. Him and, I believe, Abel both are, no, not Abel. He tops out in triple digits. Abel scrapes right up against him, but has apparently not broken 100, as far as I know. Could be totally wrong about that by now. But, and Painter's got, he's got this great vertical break. His command is okay, but again, Baseball Prospectus dings him for that. He's got a low 80s slider that has a horizontal break of like a foot. He's got a changeup. He's got a curve. In 2022, he really came into himself, as we all know. He went three levels up in the farm system. And as I said, and Mattingly said this to John on Hitting Season, that the maturity, both physically and mentally, is off the charts.
Oh, Alex Coffey wrote about that a couple days ago, about how Andrew Painter sort of understands his own body type and what feels right, and like understanding baseball and looking at it from that perspective, they feel is really mature, because he put on a bunch of muscle in the off season, and he was up to, like, you know, I think almost 240 pounds. He's like, I do not like this. This does not feel right on my frame. And so they're like, his ideal weight is more like, I think it's like 125 or something. And so that's like where he is. Because that just feels better for him. And they think that that's like a really big development in his overall development as a, you know, as a pitcher, both, you know, for his mental game.
I should really look into what his workout routine is.
Not 100, 225 pounds. Jeez, sorry, not 100. I can't read.
Fucking eighth grader.
It's Friday.
Andrew Painter and I are basically, you know, we're the same person. height wise, athleticism, you know, as a couple of talls, I should really be looking at what his workout routine is. And I assume I would very quickly become exactly the kind of athlete he is.
So that's information. Kill you.
Preston, if you're listening, that's information I need. Thank you. It definitely wouldn't kill you.
I'm sure Preston Mattingly is listening to the continued success. Really, the non-technical baseball part of our hit and season podcast venture.
Andrew Painter just chucks a medicine ball at me. I catch it, but my torso breaks off from my legs and flies against the wall and splatters.
I'm imagining this as a cartoon, sort of like
yes.
Ren and Stimpy style, and it's very, very graphic.
Oh yeah, it's extremely graphic. Yeah, yeah. So Painter is I know we don't have a lot of. I think we kind of just started looking away from prospects for a while because the Phillies farm system was so barren, and we were more interested in what was happening at the major league level, and you know let's start seeing success at the major league level, and then we'll start talking about the like less visible aspects of the Phillies franchise, of the Phillies organization. Andrew Painter is such a reason to be excited about prospects. And I know I don't have to tell people to be excited about Andrew Painter, but when you just go through stuff like this, it really is. It's just incredible. And it is very gratifying to see him get the kind of exposure he's getting from outlets like this, where they're like, no. We're not talking about the best Phillies prospect. We're talking about the best prospect. I mean, he didn't give up an earned run in his first 32 innings as a professional pitcher. And he finished 2022 with a 1.56 ERA with 155 strikeouts and 25 walks over 103 and two-thirds innings. Yep. If that's exactly what you want to see from your prospect. Like you're probably projecting him as worse than that. So when he comes through like that, it's just like, holy shit. I mean, the debate is not like, oh, what's Andrew Painter's role in the Phillies organization? It's, do we want him for the first half or the second half? What's going to be better?
And it's really, it's incredible because he jumped three levels in 2022, which was his first full year as a pro. Because he was drafted in 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's not long ago. He's just shot right up. And the Phillies are, and everyone's excited about it, which is so, again, that's really cool because it's both the Phillies 2 years ago having picked the right guy. You know, they picked Andrew Painter and it was the right decision. And they've managed now to develop him to the point where he is like the most touted prospect, you know, pitching prospect in baseball. So I'm super excited to see what he can do. But the article that Alex wrote was that they're trying to ramp him up very slowly and intentionally, knowing that he might have to pitch into October. So they're expecting he's going to be up. It's just a matter of when. And I don't think it'll be that late.
Man, like it's such a success story. I feel like it's got to be said to just get to this point. Obviously, and we have said this as a reason to discount prospects all the time. You never know what you have with a prospect. It's years until you really know who a prospect is. We spent a very long time trying to figure out who Rhys Hoskins was after he had been a major leaguer for a couple of years.
I think we finally have that.
We know what he is. Now we have a definition. But I mean, I'm just saying it just takes so long that when you say like this guy's the future, it's like you can't know that. Unfortunately, you just can't know. You don't know what's going to happen. There's way too much chaos floating around. You just don't know. But that's why I'm saying we got to take a second to point at what a success story this is for the Phillies specifically, yes, who have reputationally been a very poor franchise to be a prospect within and be developed by. That they have reached this point with one of their guys that they picked, that they developed, and that they brought here. He did them a lot of favors by being so good. He's, you know, speed ran through the development process a bit with the cheat codes on. But that being said, it is a success story that we even got to this point. I think it's fair to assume he's going to play a significant role in this team in the coming year. We don't obviously know how that's going to go, how he's going to adjust. It doesn't seem like he has problems adjusting very much, but I'm just saying it's great to even be here. And I'm optimistic about the future, but this already Andrew Painter is a win for the Phillies organization before his major league career has even begun.
Yeah. I mean, I believe, that was Dombrowski's first draft pick with the organization. that was in his first draft. And in that time, not only did they pick right, they've developed him right. And that development is going to, that's going to continue to be reinforced up the chain as he goes, which is not how it was a mere 3 years ago. Like,
so we just like wasted
half
a decade with like fucking off with McPhail and Klentak and Kapler and like that whole fucking crew and
let's
and
not
Driveline and all that.
Let's
shit.
Not think about it that way. Let's think about that as what we had to do to get here, because that is true. I wish we hadn't had to go through that, and I wish we didn't. You know, completely.
Whatever.
But
whatever.
This is. You know, beyond that, like the Phillies now are also getting reputation for taking guys who can throw hard and improving them, helping
they
them
really
throw
are.
More accurately. And
when
so
I see a guy
that it's go all ahead. Tied in together, what Dombrowski has done to improve the organization in such a short time.
It is. It's a very encouraging. And speaking of guys who throw hard, I want to talk about Mick Abel for a minute. He pitched only 44 and two-thirds innings in 2021 for Clearwater due to a shoulder injury, but 2022 was obviously a better year for him. He has a four-pitch mix, much like Painter. He's got a fastball that typically comes in over 95 and has topped out at 99. A lot of vertical break, a lot of spin rate. He doesn't have a lot of the same like top-level, like elite-level components to his arsenal that Painter does, but because of that, his strikeout level I think is a little lower. But he uses his slider as a secondary pitch to his fastball. It hits around the mid 80s. It's got some significant diving move that does him a lot of favors. I think one of the areas they ding him on is that he doesn't get batters to chase as much as scouts want to see. But again, you know, he also struggles with consistency in his delivery, and then that obviously impacts his command. He has a curveball, but he rarely has used it. But he brought a high 80s changeup into his repertoire in 2022. So he's on every one of these lists, though, right?
Yeah, he's on all of them. And around the same spot, Baseball America has him at Major League Baseball has him at 48. Baseball America has him at 40, and Baseball Prospectus has him at 36. And that's been
that's
marked
really
uptick, because he started, at least on Baseball America, before the 2021 season at number 99.
What I want to ask you is there anybody who's on one of these lists and isn't on the others?
Is what? Sorry, one more time.
Is there any prospect of the Phillies who is on like one of these lists but isn't on any of the others? Like a guy that one group of evaluators was like, this guy rocks. We have like and like focused on him and nobody else did.
I don't believe so. From what I can tell, okay. It's the same dudes. Yeah, like
and how,
yeah, it's like
how many
like, isn't on to like they have three prospects in the top 100. Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus. It's Griff McGarry. And Major League Baseball has left McGarry off entirely. So that's
okay.
It.
Okay. So it's just, okay. So it's Painter and Abel. No position players, which is interesting, but expected. I mean, the Phillies' top position players are like Justin Crawford, who they just drafted, and Johan Rojas.
I mean, they drafted actually pretty wisely over the past couple of years, because they've got position players that are going to be there for a while in the major league level. So the position players they have now, they're either building for the long future or they have to trade for other players, you know. That's extra guys are good trade depth for stuff like that.
I really like Hao-Yu Lee. He is somebody I don't see talked about a whole lot, but the evaluations I've seen on him, he's an infielder. He was in 2022, he was in the rookie league, he was in Clearwater, he was in Jersey Shore. He's 19 years old. He's a great contact hitter. One of the quotes about him was that he just hits and always has hit. He was named the best batting prospect by league managers in the Florida State League. Apparently he's got like a lot of, I love the terms that get thrown around when you're reading about prospects and stuff, but he has great barrel awareness.
I don't even, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Apparently,
here?
I think the guy knows how to put the bat on the ball. Is what they're saying.
Okay.
He's got a fast swing. He's capable of hitting a lot of line drives. He's got good extension. His power isn't great, but you know that's just not the kind of player he is. He's able to see a breaking ball really well, and able to like hit a breaking ball really well. His bat speed needs to improve, but like he's got a solid build. His swing is just very simple. He's got a solid approach, and he's just in general like a really good athlete with average speed. And it's like his instincts in the infield are pretty sharp, and he's got a more or less average arm. So like defense isn't like where he lives, but he's such a great contact hitter and just a great athlete. And I'm very intrigued by him. I'm curious to see who the first Phillies position prospect is to start appearing on these lists, even if it's like very low, because this is an area where like when you talk about the Phillies farm system has been lacking. This is an area where, they're still a little behind here. They didn't, Dombrowski hasn't been here for that long. They were still recuperating from an era in which there was a lot of different information flying around. A lot of people weren't on the same page. Development was deeply flawed. So I think you're still seeing obviously the effects of that because, you draft a guy, he's around for a while and you want to see what you can get out of him, even if you're not the front office that drafted him. So I'll be curious to see which one of these, which Phillies position playing prospect is the first guy to start appearing on these lists with regularity. Right now, the Phillies are just a team with a couple of really, really good pitching prospects. And that's exciting as well. Like I said, that is a success story in and of itself. So I'll be very, very interested to see what 2023 looks like for some of these guys.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens with Justin Crawford.
Yeah.
He, at least on some lists, I think he's pretty high up in at least on the Phillies only list. So he might be the first guy to start appearing. He's really, really young. Last year was his first year. I think he was 18 last year. So he's, he's the baby. I think he just turned 19. And so, like the world is his oyster. It'll be really cool to see what he does with all of the raw talent he has. I hope it's a good year for him.
Me too. I hope it's a good year for all these guys.
And us too, as humans.
And us. I hope everyone listening to this has a good year, including you, Preston Mattingly.
I'm sure you're listening.
Including you, Andrew Painter, as I drag my severed torso across the floor with my guts hanging out. Good one, I say, a bunch of blood bubbling out of my mouth. I'm imagining he threw the medicine ball at 101 miles an hour. So
I watched the first few episodes of The Last of Us yesterday, so this is all in a place where I am in my brain. So this is very good.
And that's real, too. Did you see all the headlines where they were like, that could really happen? And you're like, oh, nice.
I didn't read any of that, no.
I hope I'm a sexy fungus in the apocalypse.
My deal is because I have to spend so much time on Twitter for my work days is that when I'm not working, I don't even go on the internet most of the time.
That's awesome.
It's great. I have to stay up with some sports news, which is why I'm glad my husband loves sports and he can help me stay up on things. But I'm not working. Why would I go onto the internet where I could see things that would make me feel not good?
I'm Liz. My screen time was down 67% according to my iPhone. That's great, Liz. The rest of us are living on the internet where our eyes bleed as we consume information we don't need and the blue light wrecks our brains. Hopefully, as our queen of the apocalypse, you're able to, wrangle us into a more productive state.
Queen
but
of
until
the
then,
apocalypse.
We'll just,
I love
we'll
that.
Just
Sorry,
have to.
I'm adopting that officially.
We'll just have to appreciate that you have purged the internet from your free time. That is beautiful. That's a good thing. And that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. I hope you enjoyed our extremely serious and real Hall of Fame talk. And I hope you enjoyed our very intelligent and aware prospect talk. Though I gotta say, that was some pretty... We sounded pretty okay with our prospect talk there.
Yes,
I would say.
We didn't say anything about tools or projections or anything. We just talked about them, and that is why we sounded like we knew what we were doing.
When I say barrel awareness, I think of somebody like pointing at a rain barrel and going, there's one. Like, I know what it means, but it's just,
any given time, he knows exactly where all the barrels are within a 10-mile radius.
Is there a barrel nearby? This guy will fucking tell you. Don't ask me. Ask him.
It's the most useless special power ever given out.
But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. As always, thank you for listening, and thank you for listening to all of the podcasts, a part of the Hit and Season podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness and the weekly roundtable of Hit and Season with John Stolness, myself, and Liz, and The Dirty Inning, which we will have a new episode soon as well with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. Our last episode is available now. It is about the first home run hit in Philadelphia Phillies history, and that was a lot of fun. We always have a lot of fun on that show. And head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hitandseason. I'll be honest, the Patreon has... I never like when the Patreon feels barren. There have been few updates this month. It's been a tough month, folks. It has been a tough month, and I hate for people to have to spend $5 to get a note saying, sorry, there haven't been updates. And this is really the first time in a while that I feel like I've really, you know, let people down. But I'm about to go to my second funeral in 1 month, and it's January. Yeah. So the year has been rough, and the Patreon has paid the price, unfortunately, but we will do our best to keep generating content there as well.
We
for $5
appreciate your understanding. Thank you.
Yes, we do appreciate your understanding. With a lot going on, yeah, we appreciate your patience, but it is still well worth your $5 over at the Patreon. We will get something else up on the Patreon this month, and we will next month be much more I think back at a normal rate of production there as well. So Don't give up on us just yet. We have plenty more content to come. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you on the next Continued Success.